Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null. And so
right. Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting video streaming live from our studios in New York City. I'd like to welcome you all over the world, all of the stations carrying this. Today, we're going to begin our program with an in-depth, original investigative report. It is entitled, Can We Trust Wikipedia and its medical skepticism. This is based upon a long-time review of the scientific literature by our scholar-in-residence, Richard Gale, and myself. And we will post this. It is posted now on PRN.FM or Progressive Radio Network. And you can watch today's program by going to Progressive Radio Network and Facebook. Later in the program, we're going to have one of the most unique scientists in America on the program. He is Professor Lawrence Burke, and he is a radiologist, a mind-body physician, an acupuncturist, and the founder and educational director of Duke University's Center for Integrative and its Body-Mind Medical Study Group. We're going to talk about how dreams can save your life from life-threatening diseases. And yet, we've been told repeatedly that dreams are just random, incoherent, subconscious manifestations. They mean nothing. We will challenge that. Also today, time permitting, Chris Hedges, The Permanent Lie, Our Deadliest Threat, and I have two very inspirational, motivational videos I think you'll enjoy. One is Have a Little Faith. It's only 2 minutes long. And the second one is Why I Don't Eat Meat. Again, it's only 2 minutes long. A little longer one is American workers are being fired and forced to train their foreign replacements. We need to talk about this. We need to save American jobs, and especially those individuals in our society that have spent decades in honorable work, dedicated to a corporation. They have built up some seniority and security and a quality of life. And now, we're taking it all away. Why? Why don't we talk about this? Why don't we change it? So, these are the topics. I won't be able to get to all of them today, as many as I can. And then tomorrow, what I don't get to, I will get to. However, tomorrow, for all of our stations listening now, I'm going to play Tuesday night's Progressive Commentary Hour. It's not meant to make you feel good. It won't. It's one of those programs when you hear it, it shakes you to your core. It's two of the finest minds, most aware minds on the planet about our environment and the fact that we have been misled. We have been intentionally lied to about how serious global warming is. And so the professors spend the entire hour going over this and why the media hasn't touched this, why the other climatologists have not been open and honest. We are. We will be. You'll hear it tomorrow. I will do a regular original show on PRN.FM, but why am I doing this? Because a lot of our listeners on many of our stations, especially older ones, don't know how to use the internet, don't even have internet, so they couldn't hear it otherwise. So they'll be able to hear it. We'll play that one tomorrow. It is not skepticism that is at fault for science's lack of movement into the future. It is fear, conservatism, and dogmatism. It is pseudo-skepticism which clings to a scientifically disproved belief system a triumvirate of ancient philosophies, materialism, rationalism, naturalism, end quote. That was from Professor of Mathematics, University of California, Santa Cruz, Ralph Abraham. My presentation today is meant to challenge a relatively recent group of skeptics that identify themselves as the advocates for what they called science-based medicine, which is not to be confused with the widely accepted approach to decision-making in medical practice known as evidence-based medicine. And although science-based medicine's most vocal leaders are physicians and medical researchers, the group's origin is more properly found in the growing skepticism movement, which advocates strict adherence to mainstream science and diligently criticizes alternative and traditional medical systems and therapies. They call them pseudoscience, quackery, enemies of reason. Now, what am I talking about then? I'm talking about the entire field of complementary medicine, meaning your doctors, of which there are thousands, board certified, like Dr. Michael Schachter and Dr. Raphael Kelman, and hundreds that I personally know, thousands I've interviewed on this program. These are not quacks. These are not unreasonable people. In fact, to the contrary, if they felt that they could help their patients using their traditional training, their orthodox training, they would do that. But their patients weren't getting better. Just yesterday, walking down to the studio in mid-Manhattan, one of those physicians stopped me on the street, Raphael Kelman, and he said, what is it that people are not getting about medicine? And I said, Raphael, you're board certified in your traditional field, but you rarely use that. You're using what you have learned since then on your own. And we had this discussion right there on Broadway, talking about body, mind, and spirit. A lot of what he does is infuse a sense of what the patient, as a human being, has done that has created any imbalance in their life, especially at the spiritual level. Now, some people will say, well, that's nonsense. There's no science behind that. To the contrary, there is science behind that. In fact, some of the best science in the world supports a healthy diet, a plant-based diet, meditation, yoga, biofeedback, prayer, spending quality time with nature, spending time in silence, exercising, supplements. In fact, I wanted to be a witness at a meeting of the Codex Alimentarius on vitamins. I had seen a preliminary draft from a lawyer from the United States who said that they're going to try to take all vitamins and give the minimal dose possible. We're talking about like 1 milligram of vitamin B1 and B2 and B6 that would have no therapeutic value whatsoever, 60 milligrams of vitamin C, and they're going to eliminate like 80% of all the supplements people take. They're going to do what's called harmonizing. So every country in the world would have to adhere to the same guidelines, which means that people who value taking their supplements and herbs would not be able to. They wouldn't be allowed. So I went to the scientific literature, the official scientific literature, and I found over 500,000 studies. I had all the studies by categories, potencies that are showing efficacy. They were all high dosage, no low dosage. Vitamin C and vitamin D and vitamin E, high dosage, even higher than many complementary doctors were using, which tells me that the complementary doctors weren't even keeping up to date with good science to know how much should I give a patient. And so very few doctors, even complementary doctors or naturopaths, were giving the doses that would really help the patient. And I had the scientific literature in abundance, and I sent it to them. I sent 500,000 scientific abstracts from peer-reviewed literature only, including double-blind placebo-controlled studies. And I gave my qualifications as a PhD, post-grad, research fellow, and anti-aging medicine, published in peer-reviewed journals, and all this, all that I've done, I was not invited because that's not the information they wanted. It was objective. It was honest. It was fair. Instead, they want someone to be able to go on a television program like Dr. Oz, and I'm going to play that clip on an upcoming program where he interviews one of these skeptics, one of their leaders, who says, yeah, well, diet's important, but but he didn't say what kind of diet, and but he's not into supplements, and denigrates and says there's no value in all the other body-mind therapies, or Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, chiropractic, homeopathy. No, none of that. But what if he was asked, here's 500,000 studies on what you say doesn't exist, therapeutic value in supplements. Why don't you read this before you go on a television program? Or why don't you invite me on the program? Because I am a scholar in my field, and I stand up for the people's rights to have freedom of choice to know that these studies exist. Good science supports the use of these supplements. But you never get that invitation. You never get that call. So that's what we're dealing with. A relatively small group of people have taken it upon themselves to be the final arbiters of what is good for you. And I challenge them. And I have the actual legitimate independent science to challenge them. Now, during the course of over 45 years as a person in the natural healing field, I've been an advocate for natural healing and counseling numerous tens of thousands of people back into wellness and lifestyle changes and behavioral modification, nutrition and diet and physical exercise training and mind-body therapies. I've witnessed numerous successes, including remission from terminal cancers, reversal of illnesses otherwise assumed to be death sentences, such as AIDS. I work with 1,200 people with full-blown AIDS. For years at the Tri-State Healing Center, I saw, they saw, their family saw them going from death's door using the orthodox antiretrovirals back to full and vital health, 8 of them completely reversing their conditions. But you wouldn't know that because mainstream media chose not to come to a press conference to speak with these people and their physicians and look at their medical records. Instead, they chose to believe those people who have an ideological, political, or more often not, a financial interest in promoting the drugs and nothing else. I've seen Alzheimer's, autism, multiple sclerosis, diabetes, and severe autoimmune and inflammatory conditions reversed. There is nothing miraculous about it. It is not alchemy. It is not magic. In fact, it is nothing out of the ordinary. I too am a skeptic with a small s, not only concerning divine intervention of phenomena that portends to be a miraculous event, but also the far-out New Age health practices that have never undergone any manner of clinical or scientific scrutiny. However, we are also skeptical about what parades around in conventional medicine as being sound evidence based upon therapeutic protocols that have been proven successful. They haven't. It is my opinion, controlled and dominated by private money interest, that mainly motivates many of these individuals. And we are deeply skeptical and concerned about the serious limitations of the 19th century Cartesian reductionist view of the human body and anatomy and biomolecular activity. This paradigm, which should have been abandoned decades ago, is the one fully endorsed by the skeptic medical doctors and its small radical faction of skeptical physicians who mark themselves under the banner of science-based medicine. And it is the same belief system endorsed and promulgated by Wikipedia's co-founder, Jimmy Wells. What skeptics criticize as magical thinking and placebo effect, particularly in the eradication of life-threatening disease by alternative medical modalities or traditional healers, are in fact based upon laws of physics and biophysics that have yet to enter mainstream medical thinking. Much remains unknown or misunderstood with respect to the human biology. And there are certainly innumerable physical laws, for example, the field of quantum entanglement between mind and body and energy, that have not been thoroughly theorized. Yet the evidence is conclusive that further research in biophysics to understand the principles behind the alternative medical system that skeptics don't and refuse to understand and appreciate is warranted. Unlike current medical sciences, even evidence-based medicine strategies, quantum mechanics is a far more verifiable science. And the research is especially critical because conventional medicine continues to fail to meet its promises to patients. It is too costly for a growing number of people, and it is far too compromised by corporate profits and junk research to provide any assurances for a better future in healthcare and medical intervention. Nevertheless, the positive results of non-conventional in traditional medical systems and alternative and complementary medicine cannot be debunked nor dismissed easily by skeptics, amateur and irrational arguments and biases and their personal beliefs. Although skeptics repeatedly chant the mantra that reason should be the sole means to determine the efficacy or failure of a medical intervention, their arguments are in fact surprisingly irrational and often comical. On the one hand, science-based medicine followers acknowledge the health benefits of a wholesome diet, yet they oppose functional nutritional therapies, especially supplement and herbal regimens, as a means to prevent and treat disease because they have completely bought into biotechnology agriculture. They see no benefit to consuming organic foods. Genetically modified foods are, in their estimation, superior, or at least substantially equivalent to organic. They argue that alternative medicine, particularly naturopathy and homeopathy, costs lives, either due to these natural therapies themselves or because these therapies divert people away from receiving conventional medical treatment. At the same time, skeptics downplay and more often completely ignore the deaths of hundreds of thousands of patients every year from iatrogenic illnesses due to their own profession's over-reliance upon pharmaceutical drugs, excessive radiation exposure, and unnecessary surgery. But let me put that into a little finer point. Take an honest look at the benefits of homeopathy and naturopathy, and Chinese traditional medicine, and Ayurvedic medicine. And then ask yourself, if you have 1 million people taking the therapies, how many benefit? What you won't see are people dying because of those therapies. You'll see a lot of people will say, I feel better. I'm doing better. Now take a look at treatments for cancer, heart disease, depression, anxiety, diabetes, pain. Oh, with just one pain medication during a 4-year period, Vioxx killed a minimum of 60,000 people. Some estimates I've seen are up to 500,000. Nobody was held accountable. The field of pain management was not criticized. The doctors doing this and killing people were not criticized. Nobody had to give a refund. The company paid a paltry sum of $5 billion. They had earned $22 billion, so they still netted out almost somewhere in the neighborhood of $17 billion. So it was profitable. And yet, could you imagine 60,000 people dying from taking vitamin C? No. And what about all the people taking their own lives, especially American soldiers, 22 a day, every 24 hours, 120,000 minimally have killed themselves. And yet, the drugs, the antipsychotic drugs they take and the antidepressant drugs they take are causing a lot of this, and not a single question as to the efficacy and safety of the psychiatric approach to people suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. And think of all the cancer patients taking chemotherapy and no other therapy, nothing about their diet or immune system, rebuilding it, and dying. And they always give 100% of the credit for the death to the cancer. Yet scientific studies show that 50% of all people dying of cancer die from the chemotherapy, the treatment. And they give no credit to the downside of using vaccines. This is how bad it's become. So the purveyors of bad medicine want to be the only voices to tell us what any medicine should be. That's a neat hat trick that they have pulled. But perhaps our favorite is science-based medicine's incessant diatribe that the countless successful treatments from natural and alternative therapies, which has been used for several millennia, are nothing more than placebo effects. Worse, the placebo effect is framed as a terrible thing, although it has been intrinsic to healing since humans first made efforts to treat disease and illnesses. In fact, the dichotomy lies in the fact that these same skeptics oppose mind-body and energy therapies, which are anathema in organized skepticism. Nevertheless, integrative medicine follows psychophysical principles analogous to the placebo effect. It follows the powers of the mind that have been shown repeatedly that health can be improved through beliefs, expectations, social relationships, and even faith. The importance of positive thinking and beliefs are the underpinnings of placebo effects. And there's more. Double-blind clinical trials are considered the gold standard, but here too scientific evidence shows that such trials are intrinsically biased as well. In one study, both doctors and patients were asked to guess whether they had received the real drug or the placebo. One would expect that responses would be 50% correct. However, 80% of the patients and 87% of the doctors answered correctly. This clearly indicates the presence of preconditioned biases and how it plays into some kind of role in shaping clinical results, although the scientific mechanisms involved is not fully understood. It may also explain disagreements between the results of clinical trials on the same drug. For example, some trials show that the popular antidepressant drug Prozac slightly better than placebo, whereas several drug trials show Prozac is no more effective than a sugar pill. In the case of clinical trials for vaccines, no proper inner placebo is ever used at all. Rather, a placebo is basically the vaccine minus a viral component. So it's not a true double-blind study. Reality always supersedes scientific verification and validation. Truths exist as such before any form of analysis is undertaken, even before we are capable of fully understanding the underlying principles of what is being investigated. There may be a varying of opinions about the underlying psychobiological mechanisms of the placebo effect and its opposite, the nocebo effect. However, the fact that both placebo and nocebo effects exist is irrefutable. Multiple studies in the peer-reviewed literature prove that when we are subjugating to fear, terror, apprehension, sadness, depression, etc., it has an immediate negative impact upon our biochemistry. Likewise, when we experience joy and happiness and comfort or bliss and love, this creates a positive biochemical response. Recently, a flurry of peer-reviewed studies have been published that measure the positive impact of nature's greening effect upon our physical health and mental well-being. Independent medical research is rapidly verifying these natural ways to rejuvenate and strengthen our health and immune systems. There's no financial incentive for federal health agencies and large pharmaceutical companies and medical device firms to fund research to better understand our inherent human capabilities to heal ourselves, nor the positive effects of the neutral environment, meaning it is not making a decision on our behalf. We are engaging in nature, and therefore that environment, natural environment, with trees and water and sand and mountains and valleys and the smells of nature and the pheromones that the trees give off, all this has an immediate impact upon our emotion, our physical and mental health. The scientific evidence proves these phenomena cannot be manufactured, bottled, and sold. Yet, as Dr. Rupert Sheldrake observes, it is important to remember that animals and plants have been regenerating after damage, healing themselves and defending themselves against infection throughout the entire history of life on Earth. All of us have descended from animal and human forebears that survived and reproduced for hundreds of millions of years before the advent of doctors. We would not be here today if it were not for our ancestors' innate capabilities and capacities to heal and resist disease. End quote. Researchers in the neurocognitive sciences and immunology have uncovered reproducible evidence that what we think and feel triggers biological changes. We no longer need further proof that this occurs. What we do need to explore are the underlying physical laws that contribute to these changes. However, as Dr. John Ananias of Stanford University's Preventative Research Group argues, it can take upwards of 30 years for groundbreaking discoveries in the health sciences to eventually reach the attention of mainstream medicine, and most such discoveries are forgotten altogether. End quote. For example, if an elderly person forgoes the influenza vaccine but lives a remarkably healthy life, as many of you are, we have a lot of senior citizens listening to this program, and you know that if you continue with a sad diet and sit in front of televisions or don't go out and don't eat right, you're more likely to get the flu. But we have a lot of people who care about their health, who'll go for a daily walk. We have a woman, Marcia Caspi, who's 90-some years old, just wrote another book. And she's out there exercising with her husband. She's having a vital social interactions with people. She juices. She eats healthy. She takes her herbs. She does everything she can. Well, she doesn't get a vaccine. Does her healthy choices then count? No. No, they don't. So if she took vitamin D and omega-3 fatty acids and vitamin C and echinacea and astragalus and herbal teas like green tea, and she ate a vegan plant-based diet, which she does, that is counted for nothing, except she didn't get sick. But if she took the flu shot and did everything else, it would only be the flu shot that would be given 100% of the credit for her not getting sick. That's how warped, that's how degraded the entire body of scientific literature has become today in the science mind, in the medical mind, when it does not look at your intervention, your proactive positive choices. It disregards those as if you're irrelevant. Why are you irrelevant? Because their logic is all that is relevant. So if you don't get better, it's not because what you did or didn't do, it's because the logic dictated it. So we become irrelevant in our own lives, according to medicine, as long as we follow their dictates. So that's how it works. The fundamental dichotomy underlying the entire science-based medicine ideology is that prior scientific plausibility ultimately trumps scientific evidence. In an earlier essay, we noted that science-based medicine supports evidence-based medicine while also correctly recognizing evidence-based medicine shortcomings. For example, many Cochrane collaboration reviews, that's a group of scientists, and they're highly respected, and they'll look at certain classification of drugs and vaccines and supplements and herbs, and they'll conclude that the clinical evidence to support efficacy claims is weak, or the clinical trials were not sufficiently robust, and therefore further research is recommended. To me, that's ludicrous. It's just like saying, well, vitamins just create expensive urine. Have you read the 500,000 studies I've read? If you're the average doctor or scientist, you haven't read 1/100, 1/1000th of that. So what makes you an expert? Have you actually treated people, helped people using a natural approach and reversing their disease? No. So how would you know anything about other therapies, other modalities, other truths, other realities? Isn't it interesting we're supposed to appreciate democracy in a country that is controlled by a medical, scientific, fascistic mindset? Rather, in the science-based universe, further research should be discarded altogether because, quote, prior plausibility and reason should dictate that there is nothing worth pursuing or funding. So you mean because you have not used prayer to its benefit, you have not used healthy plant-based diet, you have not engaged in mindful exercises, then no one should benefit from researching to see how it works and to what degree, because your reasoning says it shouldn't work, because you don't understand it? To me, that is hubris, arrogance. It is narcissism at the highest level. And also understand something, that fallacies in this line of thinking that they manifest is that science-based medicine believes that prior plausibility is deeply rooted in science. It is not. It is not. If that were the case, then I can take you back to the first famous physician in the United States. It was Benjamin Rush, one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence. And he, with science-based medicine on his side, or what constituted what was considered real science, said that you were black. Then it was called Negro because you suffer from nigritude. And nigritude was leprosy. And the darker you were, the more leprosy you suffered from. The lighter, the less leprosy. And therefore, getting your skin to become lighter by bleaching it and other completely insane methods, including torture, including dunking African Americans in water, was what science accepted. And his mandates have held through many, many decades. And that's what you call reasoned medicine. He's the one who bled George Washington to death. He had a simple cold. Had he been given some soups and herbs at the time that existed and rested, he'd have been fine. Instead, science said, cut his arm and get rid of the bad humorals, get rid of the blood. They did it. And not just him, but thousands of others. And how did you treat women who were argumentative? Wasn't it one of the medical canons of ethics that if a woman argues with her husband, she is suffering from womb fury, hysteria, and therefore remove her uterus and put it on the wall or on your mantle to show that your house was fury-free? And that was common in eugenics. If a person was an unwed mother or came from a poor background or wasn't educated and was considered feeble-minded, Margaret Sanger and others, Dr. Pope and Paul, believed they should be killed for the betterment of society, to purge these bad genes. The entire history of medicine, orthodox medicine, founded by the Rockefellers for profit from the Flexner Report, is nothing but real quackery and savagery. Yet you won't take the time to study that. You won't look at yourself. In a damning Guardian opinion editorial critique by Richard Dawkins, BBC special Enemies of Reason, a two-hour assault on religion and non-conventional medicine, Dan Hind lectures Dawkins about his hypocrisy in opining humanity's entrance into an age of endarkment. Dawkins is the principal architect of the new atheism and arguably the leading outspoken voice within the global skeptic movement. He believes that faith-based practices, including alternative medical systems, are dangerous, superstitions, threatening civilization's future, and should be battled against diligently and immediately. He has even called for the guerrilla skeptics to take faith-based practices to task. Instead, Hind states Dawkins should put his attention on government and corporations as the greater evil and the real enemies of human health. Dawkins fails to recognize the inherent darkness and destructive characteristics in the rationale behind the scientific paradigm he holds most dear. In effect, like pharmaceutical corporations who use perfectly rational means to promote irrationality, to promote the effectiveness and safety of their toxic drugs, so does Dawkins and his skeptic followers rely upon the illusions of their reason to convince people in accepting their irrational belief systems. A physicist is likely to acknowledge that the paradigm of radical materialism and elementary rationalism upon which science-based medicine is founded is thoroughly false. It is no longer a realistic or reliable paradigm for the future prevention and treatment of diseases. Such a worldview can only call upon new drugs, hopefully a new blockbuster drug, how often have we heard that has been long time coming, and surgery. Otherwise, quite simply, medicine has nothing to offer. It is antiquated and scientifically impoverished. These are the intellectual paupers of our times, but they're bridling with conceit because of how society has made them the new priests of the religion of modern medicine. It remains impoverished also because it's been imprisoned in a mentality that emerged 400 years ago with Descartes and later with Newton. However, science-based medicine's reliance upon a medieval atomist view of human biology and the etiology of disease, meaning solely the macroscopic scale of biomolecules that can be empirically observed or measured, is slowly being laid to rest with the advent of quantum theory. Looking at medicine from the vantage point of contemporary physics, conventional medicine is far behind the eight ball. Rather than being confined to biomolecular interactions, quantum mechanics has shown we need to start looking at biological functions in the more accurate and fundamental context of force fields, wave-particle dichotomies, and quanta, the discrete and indivisible units of energy operating below the body's cellular level. And as biophysicist and neuroscientist Vincent Bilcock of Ohio State University Center for Cognitive and Brain Science states, quote, "Things that do not fit into the existing paradigm are hard to think about." Yeah. Not just hard, impossible for these people. And it is with certainty that science-based medicine's leading voices are simply unable to wrap their brains around biophysical and quantum properties that support the efficacy of many alternative natural medical systems, such as acupuncture, homeopathy, and most importantly, from my perspective, energy transfer. Because everything in life ultimately is energy transfer. It is simply outside their profession's paradigmatic way of thinking. Quantum mechanics pioneer Max Planck, Albert Einstein, Erwin Schlesinger, Werner Heisenberg, and others should have ushered humanity into the most materialistic world. Unfortunately, modern medicine and other sciences hijacked by private corporate interest have lagged dismally behind. And worse, the skeptics' proponents of science-based medicine are determined to prevent medicine from evolving beyond its current reductionist, materialistic perspective. And for that reason, followers of science-based medicine adamantly oppose funding research that may someday explain why and how alternative healing modalities have been so successful for countless people around the world. Consequently, skeptics are the strongest opponents of the growing trend in complementary and alternative medicine therapies entering medical school curriculums. In conclusion, science-based medicine followers are adamantly in the area of wanting no research onto these modalities. However, according to Richard Horton, the editor-in-chief of The Lancet, quote, "Much of scientific literature, perhaps half, may simply be untrue." End quote. Many notable physicians and professors of medicine have noted the dire state of clinical research appearing in professional journals, including former chief editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, doctors now Professor Marcia Angell. She says, quote, "It is simply not possible to believe much of the clinical evidence that is published." End quote. She also writes about the enormous financial interest and influence drug companies have with medical school facilities. The integrity of medicine is being completely lost in scientific-based medicine skeptics' denial and failure to put more attention towards this trend and simply continue with its witch hunts against natural health displays, an arrogance that shows deep disregard towards public health. So the debate over the conflicts of interest between pharmaceutical corporations and clinical physicians, which jeopardize proper health care, has waged on for decades. In a series in 1986, I found correspondence in the journal Science, and then its editor-in-chief, also of the New England Journal of Medicine, Dr. Arnold Relman, debated Princeton economist Hugh Reinhart about the crisis in medical ethics and how physicians' values are being compromised with a profit-driven healthcare system. And Reinhart's challenge to doctors, which is remarkably similar to the charges skeptics level against complementary and alternative medicine and natural health practitioners, is that doctors are and have been businessmen, end quote. 2 decades later, Dr. Angel would concur, since physicians are now completely dependent upon the corporate medical complex. She writes, quote, drug companies are investor-owned businesses with a responsibility to maximize profits for their shareholders that is quite different from the mission of the medical profession, which is to provide the best care possible for patients. The majority of clinical evidence published in peer-reviewed literature, according to a 2007 survey conducted by the British Medical Journal, is, quote, of unknown effectiveness. That's the majority of it. And, quote, likely to be ineffective. Only 15% of treatments by mainstream medicine approved were, quote, definitely beneficial, and 22% were likely to be beneficial, quote, leaving the remaining 63% as basically useless. Well, what do you think is going to happen if a doctor who's making their living, paying their bills, is treating patients with that 63% useless medicine? Are they going to change? Are they going to acknowledge they're using useless medicine? The reviews in their scientific literature shown to be unacceptable. Most of the scientific tests today are non-reproducible. So take an honest look, people. Stand back for a moment and ask yourself, how much of science-based medicine today is proving that the therapies offered are reproducible and helpful and safe? Little to none in most of the conditions for chronic care. And yet they continue. And we're supposed to accept that they're the leaders, they're the final arbiters of all that's true in medicine and healthcare, and follow their advice. And does that mean following their advice right up to what color of tag toe we should have when we're put into a morgue, having followed their advice completely? When the medical community can see between 500,000 to 700,000 dead each year because of medicine itself, and no one says we should change, no one apologizes, no one says we've got bad science, corporatized science, we have become a homogenized mess of duplicity, hubris, and self-interest, then it is legitimate to question that it should be the only approach to health care. Skeptics repeatedly argue that more evidence is necessary. They are wrong. The evidence is in. And now what we're becoming in America is we're seeing our medical industrial complex become religiously monotheistic, when the only measure to determine the health of a person is that which can be medically supervised and validated by clinical or cohort statistics. Whether we follow a meat and or plant-based diet is irrelevant to them. Eat organic or chemically-laced food, irrelevant. Supplement or our nutritional needs or become deficient, irrelevant. Or make concentrated efforts to reduce life stresses is irrelevant to skeptics. Nevertheless, every positive choice we make has a positive result, and we don't need your doctor, a nurse, an administrator, or one of those simpletons in Congress, at the Health and Human Services agencies, the CDC, the FDA, to tell us that we have to have some trust in our own intuition and be guided by our own capacity to know that we're making healthy or unhealthy choices. And that is something for all of us to consider. I'm Gary Nall. That completes our special report. It is posted on our website. We're going to take a break and come back with our guest, who is standing by now, and he is Dr. Larry Burke. We'll go to him in a moment. Nice to have you with us, everyone. We now have our guest on the line. I gave you his background earlier in the program, and he has a really strong background in medical profession, and he holds a medical degree from the University of Pittsburgh Medical School. He did postdoctoral work at Thomas Jefferson University and the University of Pennsylvania. He's a co-author of Dreams That Can Save Your Life, Early Warning Signs of Cancer and Other Diseases, which provides a history of the research in dreams and disease and advice on interpretations. Now, nice to have you with us today.
Hey, Gary, can you hear me?
I can hear you fine, Lawrence.
Great.
Lawrence, I remember back during the Cold War, the Soviets would conduct a lot of cutting-edge and even controversial medical research, and their medical system was not profit-driven, but knowledge-driven. And Soviet scientists advanced Curlian photography. I was doing the same research with Curlian with Professor Ed Graff and others at the Institute of Applied Biology, where I was a research fellow. And we were coming up with some spectacular results and research into trying to identify the actual acupuncture meridians and experiments using light to treat illnesses. And related to your work on how certain dreams are indicators of diseases, particularly cancer, back in the 1960s, the Soviets conducted perhaps the largest study looking at the relationship between dreams and health, involving 10,000 dreams and 1,200 dreamers. And because this is the largest sample of participants in dream study, what was discovered from that study, and then share with us what new has been discovered through your work and others during the past 50 years since the Russian research? And lastly, what are some of the statistical percentages we find regarding the messages from dreams and actual cancer or other diseases diagnosis? The forum is yours.
Great. That's a good intro. Vasily Kasatkin was the Russian psychiatrist who published The Theory of Dreams in 1967. Unfortunately, it's all in Russian, and none of it's published in the medical literature, so can't really refer people in Western medicine to that reference. Fortunately, there are a couple translations through the International Association for the Study of Dreams that I'm a member of. And sort of helped bring dreams back into the medical world, where they'd clearly been lost for over 100 years, despite the efforts of Freud and Jung. But ancient cultures honored dreams as important messengers. Messengers from the gods, essentially, the Asclepian temples in Greece and all the shamanic traditions. So in the last 15 years for me, I've had several friends come forward and talk about their breast cancer dreams to me, which was complete news to me. I'd never heard of it before. And then finally went back and did the background research and found that Kasatkin had been mainly interested in neuropsychiatric conditions, but had 40 reports of brain tumor diagnoses in his book. And the breast cancer, for me, became the easiest place to look, and discovered two of my best friends that had really vivid dreams, precognitive dreams, showing that they had cancer, really showing even where the breast cancer was. And they both went in to get their mammograms, and both were told the mammograms were normal. And neither one of them were happy with that story, even though they had no lump or bump to look at. And one of them finally had to convince the radiologist to do an ultrasound, and the skeptical radiologist put the ultrasound on her breast right where she pointed and found the deep cancer in her glandular tissue of the breast. Was quite shocked to discover that, and that my friend had known exactly where it was. The other one was a physician who had a negative mammogram and didn't seem happy with the result, and actually got the radiologist to pull the mammogram back out, pointed at the suspicious area that she'd seen in her dream, and that was later biopsied and found to be the cancer. A third friend had a breast cancer, similar story, went to the doctor. Doctor blew it off, dismissed her dream as being irrelevant, did a physical examination, said, told her it was just normal breast tissue, and wound up not even getting a mammogram, and she died of metastatic breast cancer a few years later. After that, I just was inspired to do a survey and found 18 women from around the world who were able to share similar stories. And that was published in the Explore Journal in 2015, just as a pilot study, just showing what was possible to correlate dreams with surgical results. Then I gave a TED talk in 2016, which was later censored for not meeting their scientific criteria. And I know that's one of your favorite topics. So even though I pointed out that it's just like my early MRI research back in the 80s, which was my first paper on MRI of the knee, was just a survey of 20 people who had meniscal tears and went to surgery, and confirming at surgery what we saw in the MRI scan back when it was just an alternative medical technique. So at this point, we have pilot data now on breast cancer dreams, and I just completed another small anonymous survey at Duke with the breast imaging service there, surveying women who had breast biopsies, just to see if they had any dreams prior to their biopsy. And we haven't published that yet, but preliminary results show that about 7-8% of women are reporting these dreams. If we really want to get robust evidence, we're going to have to do a randomized controlled trial and compare women. We're going to be for breast biopsies. Two-thirds of them will have benign disease. A third of them will have malignancy. And then we'll have a good control group that would actually make an impact. And, of course, a study like that's going to cost money. So that's where we are at the moment.
Okay. I appreciate those insights. By the way, TED, for all intents and purposes, a ban you, yet I just played a part of a TED talk by a scientist last week trying to legitimize pedophilia, that it should be incorporated under the gay, lesbian, and trans movement. And I warned my audience, because we have a lot of gays, trans, and lesbians who listen to this program who are very much involved in health. And I said, just be warned, if you're not aware of this, they're going to try to bring pedophilia in as if it's a normal state, that you're born with a pedophile, and you're not. There's no science at all in this. And it's terrible to see something that is so egregious by every construct, you know, trying to legitimize it. In any case, so the fact that you were banned by TED, remember, Rupert Sheldrake was also banned. I just don't think they could possibly understand that man as deep as he goes. And you've also been attacked by the skeptics, so welcome to the club on that. Today we had a little comeuppance and showed him another part of that reality, that they shouldn't be. They're like the naked emperor. They shouldn't be walking around strutting when they're naked about good science, when virtually all the science today is under attack, as I quoted from actual sources of people in the field saying our peer-reviewed literature system is broken. You can't rely upon tests because there's such a poor amount that can be reproducible. So when you come up with something new and suggest that a dream prior to any diagnosis in an otherwise completely seemingly healthy woman could predispose or predetermines there might be cancer there, that's on some level her own intuitive self has informed her of, then it's going to go to a level that the skeptics and other orthodox people who are very linear are not going to accept. I don't care what you write and where you publish, they're not going to accept it. And you noted that among warning dreams associated with health, cancer appears to be the dominant ones, and these are later confirmed by pathological reports. So do you have any sense for why that might be the case? Does it perhaps tell us something about the nature of cancer, for example, our personal, emotional relationship towards our perceptions of cancer that distinguishes it from other diseases?
Well, it's interesting. In the TED talk, I did mention three possible mechanisms as to how this information was coming into the dream. One, the most acceptable to the conventional mindset, is that, oh, these women just had subtle symptoms that they were in denial of, and the dream just brought it to their awareness, which, you know, is certainly a possibility. The second would be there's some sort of subtle neuro mechanism of signaling that's beneath conscious awareness that translates pathology from the breast into a dream image. And then third would be it's it goes to a whole other level, which is an intuitive level, which is the only way you can explain some of these precognitive experiences that women in the study had, where they actually, several of them had white-coated visitors in their dream and messengers, who then they later met a few weeks later as healthcare practitioners in the course of their care. So that kind of explanation obviously stretches the limits of physical understanding of space and time. And even though there's good research by Dean Radin and other people that suggest that that actually does occur. And I was going to mention, regarding the skeptics, totally agree with you about the pedophilia scary angle. And also, I felt that I had finally arrived in this field when I wrote an article in the Duke campus newspaper, The Chronicle, about the effectiveness of EFT for test-taking anxiety after there was studies coming out with randomized controlled trials showing that EFT, emotional freedom techniques, tapping actually works, and I've been doing it for 15 years, posted that article, and amazingly enough, got a comment challenge from the amazing Randy. I thought, yes, okay, I finally arrived. I got challenged by the amazing Randy, and of course, I just laughed and posted. That's like Lucy holding the football up for Charlie Brown to kick and then pulling it away at the last minute.
Yeah. Well, I wanted the audience to know what you're doing and the fact that there is legitimate science on this field. We will do a more in-depth discussion for a full hour on the progressive commentary on the near future. I'll just close with this thought. Did you ever hear Dr. Lawrence Lashan?
Sure.
Okay, I work with him at the Institute of Applied Biology. And he was able, in completely healthy women with no history of breast cancer, by interviewing them in depth, to determine who was most likely to develop breast cancer based upon what he considered the perception of appreciation, meaning if they were not being appreciated for what they were doing, the responsibilities they had to the other people in their family, they were far more likely than to develop cancer. And then years later, it showed to be true. And it was reproducible. Gerald Kessler, who is the Commissioner of Health in New York City, I also work with, and he did that. And then I talked with Hans Selye, the father of stress psychology, and he also confirmed that. So you're building upon the work of others. The difference is you're doing it with dreams. They didn't. And you're also looking at precognitive phenomena. And good for you. You have our full support, and we look forward to having you back as you develop even more research.
I appreciate that. I was going to mention some of the women in the study did report lack of nurturing like giving to everyone else and not to themselves as a predisposing factor to their breast cancer. And I think that's a common theme as well. So if people want to see my TED Talk, look at LarryBurk.com.
Larry Burk, BURK.com. Lawrence, thank you very much for being with us. I really appreciate it.
Great, Gary. I hope to talk again sometime soon.
We will. I'm Gary Nall, everyone. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. And tomorrow, all of our syndicated stations all across the United States, you'll be hearing a very dynamic, very powerful, very sobering, very serious discussion of global warming in a way you have never heard before. And for others, I'll be doing my regular new show on PRN.FM. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.